So Nate, I think one of the best things about the last three episodes of the Coaching Culture podcast has been how the conversation around mental health, I think, has changed so many different coaches' perspective or attitude towards mental health and how we approach it with our teams. And I look back at even not only my own perspective as a coach, but even when I started Thrive On Challenge, around how I was more into the mental training when it came to working with our athletes, the mental performance training, the visualization, and just how we could tap into the mental side of the game to improve player performance. But it wasn't really, honestly, until I met you that I started to experience a bit of shift in my perspective and started to have an appreciation for mental health. And I remember I actually had you on the podcast as a guest in one of the earlier episodes, and you had mentioned Mental Health Wednesdays, which was a thing that you do with your teams. And I remember following up in a conversation with you because I thought that was kind of a strange thing to name, like essentially what I would call like a leadership day or a culture day. You named yours Mental Health Wednesdays. And I remember asking, Nate, why did you call it Mental Health Wednesdays? And your answer really blew me away. And I still remember it today. And I just thought you could share a little bit with coaches today around why you started Mental Health Wednesdays with your team.
Well, JP, our story actually goes back about 7 or 8 years ago. I remember having a captain's meeting in the middle of January, kind of in the dog days of our season. And we weren't practicing very well. We didn't have a lot of energy and enthusiasm. And I'm asking my captains, you know, what's going on? And finally, one of them just says, you know, coach, nobody's having any fun. And for the rest of that season, one of the things that I realized was that we weren't, number one, designing practices to be fun, which is a whole nother conversation. And number two, we weren't really going out of our way to create opportunities for our players to have fun. And so for the rest of that season, we started what became More Fun Wednesdays, where we would carve out the last 20 minutes of our Wednesday practice to do something fun and silly, like let's see if we can cram the whole team into a Volkswagen Bug, or you know, do some silly relay game or something like that. And that eventually evolved over the coming seasons into not just creating a place for us to have fun, but we started to see just a positive effect on all kinds of different fronts. Like we were enjoying practice more, but we were enjoying our interactions more. You know, we seemed to be communicating better. We seemed to be less bothered by pressure and expectations and all of these other pitfalls that can affect teams as they go through a season. And so because we saw so much fruit from that effort early on, we made a deliberate commitment to the maintenance of our mental health. And so we just called it Mental Health Wednesday. And if you think, why mental health and why not, you know, Oriole Wednesdays or something like that, I think of it this way. You know, we think about health in terms of our physical body. There are things that are required to be healthy, right? We want to get enough sleep before we struggle because we didn't have sleep. You know, we want to hydrate before we're dehydrated, right? We want to eat in such a way that we have energy levels before our energy drops. And I think if you take the same approach to our mental health, there are things that we can do in the same way to sort of prevent some of the mental health trappings that can have such a detrimental effect on our teams and on the individual players in our programs as we go through a season.
You've talked about your Mental Health Wednesdays in the podcast before, and I know it's impacted, you know, your level of intentionality has not just impacted me, but it's impacted other coaches out there. But I think over the last 3 weeks, I think so many coaches have been going, okay, I get it. This is really important. But how do I attend to the mental health of my team? Like, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm a basketball coach. I'm a soccer coach. I'm a volleyball coach. And that's what we're going to jump into today's episode, is you're going to give coaches some simple tools, some ways that they can attend to the mental health of all their players, not just the ones that they may feel like are struggling, but everyone, because this is something that's going to have such positive effects, not just on performance, but on the athlete's experience and development. You're listening to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host, Nate Sanderson. Every week in around 30 minutes, we're giving you strategies and tools for you to grow as a leader and build your culture. We know the reason why most teams struggle, and that is because they have a dysfunctional culture. This leaves coaches frustrated with entitled players, losing seasons, and toxic environments. And at Thrive On Challenge, we believe the silver bullet is a transformational culture. We help coaches to create and sustain transformational cultures so they can strengthen relationships, raise standards, and inspire others to make an impact. To learn more about our workshops, retreats, and mentorship program, go to thriveonchallenge.com. You can also get the coaching notes PDFs for every coaching culture episode by subscribing to our weekly newsletter. You're listening to episode 141, Coaching Tools for Mental Health. Now, Nate, you're going to share with coaches today some tools that are going to help us to develop the mental health of our athletes. But I know as a coach and many coaches out there that a lot of this feels overwhelming. And I want to come back to a couple of our guests that we've had on the podcast, one of them being Kate Fagan a few weeks ago, and just her experience with her trainer at Colorado and just the influence that that trainer had on her mental health, just being there and having that relationship and being an ear just to talk about the things that she was struggling with, as well as, you know, Dr. Bruce Perry talking about the importance of us creating an environment where, you know, things are predictable and it is a safe environment. And I think that is honestly one of the most important things that we can continue to do. And in just some encouragement on this topic of mental health is just on the importance of us creating an environment and a culture where people feel they are seen, they are known, and they are loved. You know, I think that's just so, so important that we do that. And it's just really big encouragement for all of us on our journey to be, you know, to build that transformational culture.
So JP, the three tools that we're going to talk about here this week are really more topics of a conversation. And I want to just make clear to coaches that these don't have to be all done in a one-on-one setting with your players. It could be a group conversation. It could be things that you facilitate ways for your players to talk about these things with each other. But what we're going to share is pretty consistent with the research in psychology that says if players, or if people for that matter, have the opportunity to be able to voice and examine some of the stories and some of the expectations that they're carrying with them, that it can be tremendously freeing and have a beneficial effect on their mental well-being. So the first one of these tools that we're going to talk about here is built on the principle or the premise of name it, tame it. And there's a story that goes behind this psychological approach, and it goes something like this. So a number of years ago back at the University of Virginia, when psychologists and researchers were first starting to use fMRI machines to be able to map the brain, there was a research team that said, we'd be really interested in figuring out what parts of the brain are stimulated by the experience of different emotions. And so what they did was, is they took a bunch of subjects and they rolled them into this MRI machine. So it just surrounds their head. They have to lay perfectly still, but on the inside of the machine, they're able to project images or words that the participant can respond to. And so the way they set up the experiment was they put a subject in the machine and they would project a picture that was intended to elicit a specific emotional response. So for example, they might show a picture of an adult grabbing a child by the neck with their fist drawn back, and they would let the participant look at that image for like 5 seconds. They would watch what areas of the brain were stimulated electrically by that image, and then they would ask them, what are you feeling? And so they would try this with all different sorts of emotions. And what they found, their discovery in this, wasn't necessarily about what parts of the brain were stimulated, but what happened after they named the emotion. So in that case, with that particular image, the subject all of a sudden is going to react viscerally, right, to rage or fear or anger. There's going to be a dramatic response to that image of an adult threatening the child. They wait for 5 seconds and then they verbalize, I feel anger. And what happened immediately after they said it is that the electrical activity in that part of their brain that was stimulating this emotional feeling began to subside. And when they asked the participant, tell me about the intensity of the feeling when you first saw the image, and then 10 seconds later after you processed the image and you shared about it, their self-reporting was that they felt less intense emotion after they verbalized it. And so this became sort of the foundational study behind this theory of name it, tame it. And the idea is if you can create opportunities for your players, for your kids, for your spouse, whatever, simply to be able to describe what they're feeling, that in and of itself begins to reduce some of the stress and the pressure and the intensity of that emotion.
Yeah, I think coaches could be a little uncomfortable maybe sitting down and trying to have a conversation and get our players to articulate what they're feeling, as well as I think that's uncomfortable for players. And there's something about even just when we're trying to engage in these conversations, there's a lot of research out there. One of my favorite books is Daniel Siegel's The Whole Brain Child, and he talks about a large amount of research that shows just doing something while you're having these conversations, whether that's kicking the ball around, shooting around, playing a game, whatever it be, but doing some sort of activity. And then while you're doing that activity, having a conversation. I remember years ago, I started going golfing with a few of my players on the weekends after practice, the guys that like to golf, and just the conversations that we would end up just naturally emerging around the things that they were struggling with on the golf course was really profound. The other thing that you can have your players do, and I know you had confidence journals in your Mental Health Wednesdays, and other coaches have had players to keep journals, but there's extensive amounts of research around getting people to journal, not just about the things that have gone well, but the things that have been challenging, the struggles that they have they've been facing or encountering, and just how just writing that down is able to help people to connect what they're feeling with what is actually happening, and retelling that story can actually name it to tame it.
Well, I think that's a great point, JP. The research would say that when you respond emotionally to a situation, that what your brain is craving for is recognition, right? It's sort of like an alarm is going off. There's something here that's threatening. There's something here that has made me sad. There's something here that's disappointing. And it wants to be heard. It's like the fire alarm that wants to be heard. And there's lots of different ways that that can happen. It doesn't have to be just in a one-on-one conversation. It can be in journaling. It can be, when working with our kids at home, we have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. And oftentimes we ask them to try to draw something, that illustrates how they feel. You might have a player, I know Boomer Roberts likes to engage with his players on music, and asking what's a song that, encapsulates kind of your feeling about the season so far, like even being creative with things like that. It's just the idea of encouraging some kind of expression so that those emotions can be heard.
So the trap for me, and I know other coaches may be able to relate to this, is that when people, not just our players, do open up and share how they feel, I personally just want to fix it. Like, I always want to offer a solution. Or sometimes I'm even as bold and stupid as to tell them why they feel that way. What we need to try and do in the moments that people are sharing how they're feeling is not to try to offer a solution or an explanation, but to approach it with genuine curiosity, right? Genuine curiosity. And that is by asking questions and encouraging them to tell their story, the story behind why they are feeling the way they are feeling. The value in this, it's backed up by brain science, right? For us to regulate our stress response system, we need to tell the story. Storytelling enables us to understand ourselves and what's happening in our world by using both our right brain and our left brain, right? For the story to make sense to us, the left brain, the logical part of our brain, needs to put things in order by using words and logic. But the right brain, it adds those sensations, emotions, and memories to the story. So storytelling, Nate, literally connects the left and the right brain, which is calming and healing for our mental health. So athletes, they need us to do a lot more listening and asking questions than us telling them things.
Well, JP, Mark Manson talks about a similar process in his book, Everything is Effed. And he talks about the thinking brain and the feeling brain having to work together to tell that story. In other words, we have certain emotions and the thinking brain has to explain why we feel that way. And that kind of brings us to the second tool that we're going to talk about today, which is helping players to gain perspective, a different perspective, or being able to reframe their experience in a way that is more beneficial to them. In other words, if they're telling themselves a story where they're constantly the victim, then they feel powerless, they feel like their situation's outside of their control, and that negative kind of emotional frame of mind is only going to continue to spiral. So the ability to be able to ask good questions and provide perspective doesn't discount what a person is feeling. It just helps them to interpret it in a different way. A couple examples come to mind. We think about how we can encourage people to reframe. I remember back in the Super Bowl when the Patriots were down 28-3 to the Atlanta Falcons. If you go back and watch, you know, the mic'd up kind of highlights of that game, as soon as the Patriots got the ball back, you see Julian Edelman wandering up and down the sideline saying, "It's going to be a hell of a story, boys. It's going to be a hell of a story," right? What's he doing? He's reframing this dire situation, you know, where they're down 28-3, where they could be sitting there saying, "Oh my gosh, how did this happen to us? I can't believe we choked on the biggest stage. We worked all season and now we failed." But here he's trying to be inspirational by, yes, we're acknowledging where we're at, but we're telling a different story, a story that leads to hope. I think of another example with a player of mine a couple of years ago who had been a starter the year after that. Playing time is gradually diminishing as the season goes on, goes from being a starter to the rotation to being at the end of the rotation, and then to kind of not getting in the games that much at all as the season progressed. And this was really stressful for a lot of obvious reasons. And so during my one-on-one kind of mid-year with this player, you could tell that she was really being affected in practice and in games and her enthusiasm and that sort of thing. And so we sat down and I just asked her, you know, "How are you feeling? Tell me where you're at." Kind of the same thing you just talked about there. Tell me your story of what's brought you to this point in the season. But what I tried to do in our conversation is offer an alternative way to view where she was at. So I remember thinking back to a book I read called Burn Your Goals by Joshua Medcalf. And in this book, he comes back to this phrase over and over again. What if I could see my reality and frame it under the idea that this is for my benefit? Like, no matter what I'm going through, no matter my challenges, no matter my struggles, if I could embrace it and say, this circumstance in my life right now was given to me for my benefit. Now I start to search for, what is my purpose in this? What is the meaning that can come from this? What is the growth that I can experience from this circumstance? And as we started talking about that with this player who also happened to be a team captain, we really emphasized the amount of influence that she could have as a teammate. You know, not getting what she wanted in terms of playing time and the role on the court that she certainly would have wanted at the beginning of the year, but being able to walk through that in a way that modeled for her teammates what selflessness looked like, you know, what it meant to sacrifice for the team and still show up with energy and still give everything that she had to being a captain and being influential in that way. And as we started to change her perspective and look at it from a different frame of reference, all of a sudden, there was a different story that we could tell about her season. And at the end of the year at the banquet, when we're making our speeches and we're talking about different players, this is one of the things that we highlighted that her teammates would say about her was how she handled the situation with so much grace and how it was obvious to everyone that she put the team first. And what a great story to tell about someone's character, even when she wasn't getting what she wanted.
Yeah, when it comes to reframing, there's a journal activity that I do, I have coaches do, and I think coaches could even have their players do if they have them, you know, keep those journal logs, or just a question you could post them to reflect on or activity you could give them, is just asking them to list down the three biggest problems that they're facing right now. And then on the other side of that paper, write down, what is the opportunity in that? And that's something where I feel like I'm overwhelmed by something or I'm unhappy with my circumstances, is write down the three things that are really, I consider to be problems in my life, and actually be intentional and writing out, what is the opportunity in that situation? How is that for my benefit?
Well, JP, that's a great activity. I've even heard of some coaches having players write their dilemma on the front of the card, handing it one person to the right, turn it over and see if they can, again, what's the opportunity that somebody else sees, right, when you're in that perspective? So there's a lot of ways to do that that can be beneficial for your team. Now, the third tool here that we're going to talk about is the issue or the topic of expectations. And I want to make clear here before we get into this that when I use the word expectations, I'm not talking about standards. Sometimes when I caution people about the expectations they have for themselves or for the future, I get criticized because they'll say, "Well, you don't have high expectations for your players." That's not true. We have high standards in our program. We have high standards for our behaviors as a team. But when I'm talking about expectations, what I'm really referring to here is how you're projecting into the future. In other words, your expectations, what you think is going to happen, what you hope happens, or what you want to happen. So one of the most obvious daily examples of this is the weather forecast, right? It's a meteorologist's best shot at predicting what's going to happen with the weather. And this can rightly or wrongly, affect our mood in strange ways. My 5-year-old came into my office the other day. She walked up the stairs. She said, "Dad, I need you to stop what you're doing. I have very bad news." This is in the morning. And I said, "Okay, Adelaide, tell me what's going on." And she said, "Dad, I looked at the weather on mom's phone, and it's supposed to start thunderstorming at 1 o'clock and rain all day. So if you want to do anything outside, you have to do it right now." You know, and she's so serious about this, and she's so worked up about the fact that we're not going to be able to go outside and play. But we don't really know if that's actually what's going to happen. And in fact, in that case, my wife's phone was still attuned to her parents' house, which is 3 hours away on the other side of the state. It didn't rain at all that afternoon, right? So we went through this sort of dramatic experience, and none of it was based in reality. And I think a lot of times when we think about what's disappointing, Brené Brown would say our disappointments in life are tied directly to our expectations of the future. The conversation that becomes beneficial for our mental health is just doing what she would call an expectation audit. And that is, as you're looking ahead to a game or to a practice or to a vacation or whatever it might be, trying to take a moment and think about what are my expectations about what this is going to be like can be really important, because oftentimes we aren't aware of our expectations until they're not met. Then all of a sudden we feel disappointment or we feel frustrated with somebody else, and we look back and we think, well, it's because I expected you were going to communicate better with me. It's because I expected you were going to be here on time. It was never verbalized. I wasn't even aware of it until that person showed up late, and all of a sudden I'm angry, right? So being aware of those expectations begins to undermine some of their potential to cause disappointment. Now, the second piece of this that's really important, and again, just trying to facilitate a conversation around the idea of expectation, goes back to something else that Brené Brown has written about frequently. And that is, as you list your expectations, as you think about the future that you want or hope to happen, being able to identify how many of those things are under my control, and having the ability to let go, or at minimum to be able to acknowledge that there are things that I hope will happen, but I don't really have full control over. And if you allow those things to determine your mood, if we go back to our example of the weather, if it's forecasted to be a sunny day and it rains, I don't have any control over the weather, right? And so for me to stake my emotional well-being on the unpredictability of the weather would seem relatively foolish. Like, I don't want to feel up and down based on the number of clouds in the sky. So how do you get around that? Like, how do we shape our expectations around things that we can control? Well, I'll share an example from Brené Brown. She talks about when she first started speaking and doing public speaking, she would go into an arena or she'd go into an auditorium and she'd look out over the crowd and she would think, my goal in this message is that every person that's here would take something away that's going to affect their life. And that seems like a noble goal, but she began to realize that she didn't really know if that was ever going to happen. How would she know what all 400 people are thinking as they're walking out the door? And she also didn't have any control over their attention, or were they on their phone, or were they distracted by somebody else, or were they actually listening, right? So there's all these factors here that started to undermine how she felt at the end of her speaking events, until she changed her expectation to be rooted in something she could control. So what she now tells herself instead is that my goal when I walk off that stage is to look back and say, Brené, I'm proud of you because you worked so hard to prepare for this. She has full control over what she does to prepare for those events. And so feeling that pride that we did everything we could going into the event feels much better. It's an expectation where she controls, or has a large amount of control over, the outcome.
So when you're talking about expectations and the way that you're talking about them, Nate, I think there's a couple applications that we can see as coaches. And the first is just kind of a small thing, but something that I've noticed in my team, and I know other coaches have experienced, which is, say you're playing a team that you expect to beat. You expect them, your players expect to beat them, but you're down. You're down early in the game. You're down really late in the game. One of the common things that we hear, or we may even say, is, we shouldn't be losing to these guys, right? We shouldn't be losing to these people. We're better than them. And right there, you see how our expectations are only creating and adding more pressure. they're stealing the joy from that moment, stealing the joy from that game and that experience, because we have this expectation that we're better and that we should be winning by, you know, so many points. And this really brings us back to this thing of just being a team that is so focused in on the process. They're not focusing in on the scoreboard, or they're not focusing on what the media says or what other people are saying or what we might even think ourselves, like as far as should we, do we expect to win or not. But being a team that comes in at timeouts, at a halftime, and is not worried about those expectations, but worried about what is within our control. But it doesn't just apply to the games. It applies to something even much bigger than that. It applies to something much bigger than improving our performance. And it comes down to the culture that we're trying to build, what we are working at as transformational coaches day in and day out. And that is creating a culture where our players are seen, they are known, and they are loved. We are working to create a culture that is built on meaningful relationships, meaningful experiences, and meaningful work day in and day out. It's not about winning the next championship. It's not about finishing the top in our league. It's not about how many Division I athletes we put out. It's not about us getting to the next level. Because when we have those type of goals, when we have that type of vision, we will continuously be creating more and more expectations upon ourselves and for our players that are unhealthy. And instead, we're coming back to that, our purpose, our mission as transformational coaches, which is to create a transformational experience for our athletes.
Well, JP, I think all of those are great points. And I just want to leave our listeners with two things here as we kind of wrap up this discussion this week. One, a very specific example of what it looks like to reframe and kind of adjust our expectations. This made the rounds on Twitter here over the last week. Was a memo that was sent by the Canadian government to their workers who are at home working from home. And it's titled Working Remotely, COVID-19 Principles. And I just want to share one or two of those because I think it's such a great example of kind of this reframing and grounding of expectations. So number one is, you are not working from home. You are at your home during a crisis with children running around trying to work. Just think about the power in that language of reframing those efforts that we're trying to be productive at home. Another one, the second one, your personal, physical, mental, and emotional health is far more important than anything else. We hear this from our educators that if you could send our kids back to school this fall, we don't necessarily care as much about where they're at in reading and math. We care that they come back excited to learn, excited to be back, that they're as mentally healthy as they can be when the opportunity comes for them to return to school. These are just great examples of subtle ways to make adjustments. I want to leave you, JP, with one last thought here, because I think one of the things as coaches, we can feel like there's a lot of pressure for us to be the ones that has to do all of this with all of our players. And, you know, oftentimes when you create that culture that you described of great experiences and great relationships, as you begin to model these conversations, maybe it's just with your captains on a weekly basis. I remember our captain of captains a couple years ago would come into my office every day before practice and before we got on the bus, and we just talk about life and the team and what we're doing that day and, you know, whatever might be going on. And I remember thinking, you know, there's nothing that Macy knew that I didn't know, and there's nothing that I knew about our team that Macy didn't know. You know, we had that great relationship. So what that enabled her to do is to be able to have similar conversations with her teammates on the bus or when she's giving them a ride home or before practice, because we experienced it there. And then it began to multiply through our team that they could do it for one another. And if anything else that coaches take away from this, I just hope it's becoming more comfortable with providing opportunities for players and for the people around you to be able to name what they feel, to be able to help them provide some perspective to tell a better story, and to be able to recognize the expectations that are harmful to us in our life and adjust them so that we can walk forward with more confidence and a better outlook on life.
So since the Kate Fagan episodes of the Coaching Culture podcast, many coaches have reached out to me and asked if I would recommend What Made Matty Run as a book study for their team. And my initial reaction was, no way, like that's such serious, that's tough subject matter. But the more I thought about it and the more I actually talked with some of these coaches about it, I was like, I think this could actually be the most important book you could do in a book study with your team. you know, I think about all the book studies that I hear coaches, you know, having with their team. And I think about the ones that I've done, and they're typically around performance or working hard or being a good teammate. But I don't know if there's a topic that is more important in today's sporting culture than mental health. Like, I don't think there's anything more important that we're working to develop in our athletes than the mental health of our athletes. Now, while I think What Made Matty Run could be an incredibly powerful book study with your team, I don't think we should go about it haphazardly, which is why I'm going to be working with Nate over the next month to develop a book study guide for you and your team. If you chose to use What Made Matty Run this offseason or this upcoming season, if that is something that you're interested in getting when we have it released, I'm putting a link in the episode details of this podcast. It'll be a Google form that you just fill out, leave your name, your email, and the level of team that you coach. And we'll be in touch as soon as we have the What Made Matty Run team study guide. Lastly, there's a lot of great information in today's podcast that Nate shared. And if you want access to the coaching notes, this is probably one of those episodes where you might want to review those coaching notes. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter to get those coaching notes. There's a link in every episode details.